This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
Yeah, here we go, another Brock and Salk podcast. Hello, sir.
How you doing there, Salk? I can't say good morning, good afternoon, good evening, because podcasts live in just the...
ether?
Yeah, just out there, wherever you want to gather it, whenever you want to gather it.
Fourth dimension of time.
Good day. Good day, Mr. Salk. Good day,
Kyle. Good day to you.
Good day, howdy.
Good day.
Hello.
Yeah.
Gang's all here.
Good day.
Gang's all here today. All-star break edition here of the Brock and Salk
podcast. Can't stop this train.
No.
No, sir.
No. This is,
you ever been to an all-star game? You ever go in your lifetime? Was it ever at Fenway or growing up back in the day? No?
Nope.
Never well, it was at Fenway.
It was in
99.
I was living in D.C. at the time.
Carted him out.
Yeah.
That was what I remember is the Mark McGuire show. That was the, like, Mark, because...
Was that 98 that summer? Well,
no, it was the next year.
Okay.
And it was McGuire at Fenway. Just and Bonds. And, but really, Pedro stole the whole thing, struck everybody out. It was just...
Did they, Ted Williams, he was still alive. They didn't roll him out.
He was frozen. Cryogenically frozen Ted
Brought
Williams.
Him out in a golf cart so that he could say hello to Nomar, because he loved Nomar.
Why?
Everybody loved Nomar.
Nomar.
Like, everybody loved him. You couldn't help but love him. It was before he got bad. It was when he was still good. So.
And I believe this is the special week way back when, like 13 years ago, that I was in Chelan.
Yeah.
Picking blueberries, and you and Colin Paisley were reading
stuck
the,
here together. So what else, Sonny, is being done?
We're reading the headlines off ESPN.com.
Well, it says here.
it's quite literally what happened. It's the only time in my entire life of doing radio that I've ever run out of things to talk about.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Just like, so... Well, we got 4 minutes before this break.
You got any sound in that system? Roll some cuts, maybe?
Basically what happened. Colin and I looking at each other.
Get Brock back here.
No, there was no sound. Like, this is early. You got to remember that, Kyle.
We didn't even have a library. Nat hadn't deleted it all.
No. 2 or 3 months into our show.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. And the station.
I was probably here. I was probably an intern at that point.
You might have been. Well, why didn't you come up with something for us to say? It was before Howdy was on the show, for sure. Otherwise, I would have just yelled at him for 10 minutes.
That would be great. I would have just filibustered.
We made Branion Sings the Hits. It was a whole album of Goose Sounds.
That night. How'd the show go? I didn't know that... You know, the experts in radio take all-star break off in July because it's the slowest. I didn't know any of that then. I was like, how was the show today? It's terrible.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. We had to read the headlines. we went to ESPN.com. It just read the bullet stories. It was a terrible show. Horrible. You can't ever do this again.
It wasn't good. And there seemed to be less news. Like, today you could actually make a pretty good show.
The NBA Finals are going on still.
There's tons of good stuff going on right now, but not that day, man. It was the as low gets. We fully ran out of things to talk about. So we'll get to the All-Star game here in a minute because there's some good stuff kind of coming out of that and some conversation. But, you know, start with how the first half of the season ended here for the Mariners, Brock, because I think there's a lot of telling stuff that occurred really just in that last 6 games. You have the 2 losses to the Yankees, and I think there's stuff to learn there. And then you have the fact that that could have been it for them, right? That's a pretty good, like, all right, we're done here. We did what we came to do, right? It's like the guy or woman who gets into the presidential race because they want to, like, get some of their issues out there. And then, you know, people talk about them for a little bit, and then they go to, like, you know...
Amy Klobuchar.
Right, they go to Super Tuesday, they get their...
He's gone.
All right, like, yeah, all right, I'm good. But now I'll just go endorse somebody. Like, I'll give it up. I did what I came to do. Maybe I've got myself a spot speaking at the convention, and I'll maybe give this a run in 4 years when I'm ready. And that's an opportunity to do that. I mean, you get squashed in 2 games by the Yankees, who just hit everything, beat the guy that's supposedly your ace, and Yusei Kikuchi, 5 runs in the first couple innings. All right, let's go home. That was fun. We gave it a good run. Let's call up the kids and see you later. And competing was fun. But instead, they come out the next day. Logan Gilbert dominates a very impressive lineup that was hitting on all cylinders just the day before and the day before that. And the next thing you know, you win 3 straight. You find drop the last game before the break, and we can talk about why that happened. But what another incredible ability to stick to it, not give up. I God, love that element of this team.
It felt in just in Twitter and social media circles and just hearing, here we go again, right? Just that it just felt in that first game against the Yankees, you just get your doors blown off, as you said, with Kikuchi. Oh my gosh, he's supposed to be the stopper. Not again, Justin Sheffield. Not again, please, not again. They're right before the, you know, all this, you build me up to only let me down and all of that narrative. You just kind of sensed it. You kind of felt it. Or maybe at least I did. Is not that I went looking for it, but maybe I've got a bunch of
cynical... I didn't know that it was going to happen, but it was definitely out there.
Cynical Mariner friends of mine that have just been down this road for a couple decades now. And you thought, okay, here's the 1-5 homestand. You know, all the ground you got above 500, you're going to be now back at 500. You're going to be 6-7 games out. The Yankees are going to pass you in the wild card. All of it, right? You just kind of got that sense. And then, as you said, Logan said, not on my watch. I'm going to strike out 8. I'm going to walk 0. I'm going to totally shut this crew down through 7 innings. I'm going to take care of the Angels and the biggest superstar in all of sports right now, or certainly in baseball. And we're going to win that series. You're going to split it. Going to go 500. Going to salvage it. And feel pretty good about yourselves going into this All-Star.
Yeah, so a couple of things. There's maybe 4 or 5 conversations that come out of just those 5 or 6 games. So let's see if I can run through a few of them. The first is, all right, yes, you finally get your win with Logan Gilbert in Game 3. But I would argue that the way you handled Game 2 of that Yankee series ends up leading to the next few games. You get down, as you mentioned, in the 5-0 hole early with Kikuchi, who just doesn't have it. And yet, and I'm going to talk about him in a minute because I think there's a conversation there, but I'll give him some credit. He obviously didn't have his good stuff. His velocity was off by a few ticks. He didn't have his command, et cetera, et cetera. And he still gives you 5, right? Now, that's not a great day. He gave up 5 runs in 5 innings. Going to hurt the ERA. He didn't play the stopper role or anything like that. But he didn't give you 2 and then get knocked out of the game, and now you're going full bullpen in the second day in a row. Yep. He got you through 5. And then credit, of course, the bullpen, which just doesn't give up runs anymore, right, does their thing to kind of keep you in the game. And you battle back. That game came down to the final at bat of the game in a 1-run game. Now, they couldn't do anything against some pretty good relievers that the Yankees have. But once again, the fight in this team to just not give up and quit, even down 5-0 in the second inning to the Yankees, like, no, we're going to keep battling. We're going to keep scrapping. And they get themselves almost back to tying or winning the game. And I wonder if that's enough to carry through to the next day.
Well, what's beautiful about baseball, and I think what I have learned through these journeys of 162 games, Mike, is to your point right there, Kikuchi getting through 5 and at least saving some gas in the tank. What role did that play? Maybe not necessarily the next day as Logan was nails, but in the series against the Angels.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you just never know how to completely measure that until, you know, it's in the rearview mirror. But there's no question about it that, you know, him sucking it up and him battling and giving you 5 and just at least saving some of those innings, some of those pitches, some of those arms, so you could use them. And when you did need them over the weekend to, as you said, continue to be nails.
So that's 1. 2, Kikuchi, you know, we kind of talked about it heading into that. Okay, is he the stopper? Can he be an ace? You get beat around the day before, 12-1, Sheffield's hurt, bad, whatever label you want to describe his start as. It was really eye-opening in a negative way.
All of the above.
Yeah, for a guy that I really had high hopes for this year. And Kikuchi's your all-star. He's just been named to the all-star team. It's his first start coming off the all-star, you know, naming, and he lays an egg, mm-hmm. right? Now, maybe he's hurt. I know he had some stomach issues, right? And he went on the IL for a couple days, maybe COVID protocol, and trying to figure out exactly. He's not going to pitch in the all-star game. But that's a tough start for a guy that you're saying, okay, you're the ace. You're the top guy on this team, right? You want to get paid the big bucks next year. I'm not saying that this means you don't pick up the money just because of one bad start. Not saying that at all. But aces and stoppers are different from number ones, right? We've talked about that before. Like, yeah, every team's got a number one pitcher. Somebody's got to take the ball on opening day. They're not all aces, and they're not all stoppers. And that, like, hey, this streak ends with me, this losing streak ends with me attitude.
Mm-hmm.
There are just certain guys that have it and certain guys that I think are not, maybe they don't have the stuff, maybe they don't have the attitude, maybe they don't have the command, the consistency. But I thought it was disappointing to see that Kikuchi didn't have that.
Hard to probably label, even though so many of the metrics point to him being the most dominant or one of the three most dominant lefties in baseball this year through the first half. You know, most of the advanced metrics and numbers and everything that he has done. But hard, I think, to put that label and define that guy with what's been in the past. Right? You've seen nothing even close to that. You've seen no semblance of that. He's become their one this year. I don't think there's any debate about that, and the All-Star nod, you know, proves that. But as far as ace-like stuff, Mike, and understanding, you know, that role and that label and everything that just means, and what you just said, almost, it's like almost intrinsic. That's going to be very, very difficult to do, in my opinion, on the previous couple years of experience.
Does he need to be one of the 15 best pitchers in baseball to, like, be incredibly valuable at even what
his
extension
is
going
to
be?
No, but to be an ace, you
do. Just learning about who he is. Is he a guy who's going to start game one of the postseason for you? Is he a guy where, let's say, next year you find yourself the wild card winner or winning the division, and you got to start game one? You can line up your rotation how you want. Is that going to be Yusei Kikuchi? Or, and this is just one little piece of evidence we have right now, is it going to be Logan Gilbert?
It's trending that way.
I mean, what he did, or I mean, I know what Chris Flexen did was pretty impressive too. Not taking anything away from what he's done this year, but when you saw Logan Gilbert say, oh, Kikuchi didn't have it yesterday, Sheffield was a disaster the day before, this lineup is just mashing everything, I'm going to come in and absolutely shove for the best start of my career, 7 shutout innings against the Yankees?
1 hit.
Dude.
No walks.
Dude, that is an absolutely monstrous performance for a young kid who 2 months ago looked like he might not be able to make it in the bigs. Yeah. I mean, like you saw him those first few starts, like, uh-oh. Fastball's flat, not much else. And then it, like, he came alive over the course of the next month or so. And
what
so,
are they, 8-2 in games he started, something,
you know,
like that?
He's been a monster.
Yep.
Let's say things work out right for you. Let's say you end up making the one game wild card game this year, which I, as we've said before, I call that the play-in game, not the playoff game. And once you think of it as a play-in game, Brock, you get less mad about, oh, we worked so hard, we only have one game, baseball's not about one game. No, you didn't make the playoffs, and they're giving you a second lease on life, a play-in game. So let's say you make the play-in game, and you can kind of set it how you want, which probably wouldn't happen, but okay, let's hypothetical. Who's starting your play-in game right now?
Well, they'll each have about 14 more starts, which will be nice.
No, but I said right now, not who's going to start then.
I'm still putting Kikuchi.
I am too.
He had a bad game last game against the Yankees.
And the Yankees are a right-handed dominant
starts
lineup.
Are against playoff teams. Mm-hmm. Cleveland, Tampa Bay, Chicago, Toronto, New York. 3-1 with a 2.27 ERA and a sub-200 batting average against. And that includes the loss to the Yankees. I think there's a little bit of recency history going on with that.
Well, it's a combination of recency and long-range history. Like, it's hard for me to trust Kikuchi. I know what we've seen this year. I was skeptical going in. He has completely exceeded all of my expectations, and kudos. But that start, unfortunately, brought back... It's not just recency, it's also confirmation bias for me. I'm biased in both ways. It confirmed what I expected, and it's the most recent thing that happened. So I'll admit, I may be making too big a deal out of this here. But the other side of it is just how unbelievable the Logan Gilbert side is. I think he... You're right. Maybe right now it's still Kikuchi. 14 more starts that Brock mentioned? I might put my money on the fact that it would be Logan Gilbert by the end of that.
Well, what about if Flexen has about 8 or 9 more of those starts at T-Mobile?
No.
Nope. Is that game at T-Mobile?
Nah.
He's been pretty nasty at home.
But, like, he's Chris Flexen. He's not Logan Gilbert.
There's a nice situation going on here. You know, all three of those guys are separated in ERA by .03.
It's great, isn't it?
All three of them between 3.51 and 3.48. It's pretty awesome.
Isn't
that great, though? Hold on a second.
Good conversation.
Isn't your tone just great? It is Yusei Kikuchi. It is Chris Flexen. It is a rookie in Gilbert. And yet, where are they sitting at right now, 90 games into this sucker?
But it's baseball. Like, there's a reason Kelnick's going to get another shot. Like,
yep.
Nobody even mentions Marco, by the way. Your opening day starter.
Well, that's
like,
because...
You want Marco out there? No.
Well, that's because...
I don't want him in the building.
That's because we're about to have the second part of this conversation. As great as those three guys have been, you know, conversation 3 in the last 6 games of the first part of the season, anyway, really point out, you can't compete with only three serviceable pitchers, starters.
Yep.
Well, you got to have more than three pitchers. Marco right now is not a major league pitcher. I know he is in his history, but the way he's pitching right now, not major league quality. Justice Sheffield, not major league quality. Justin Dunn, hurt. Everybody else hurt.
Hector Santiago.
Yeah, I mean, nice bullpen guy, but I think there's a reason he's been pitching out of your bullpen. I mean, he gave you something serviceable in three innings, but these bullpen starts, like, it's too often. Like, you can get away with those over the course of a year, but every five or six games?
And there's nothing in T-Town.
Nothing.
Nope.
We've seen the best they have to offer. It's Robert Duggar.
Part of the Duggar family.
That's not going to do it. That's no. he's not good.
So,
not good.
What are you sniffing at here? Where are we leading here?
You have to do something. Don't you think if you're going to compete in the second half of this year, you have to bring in a starting pitcher?
Yes. And don't you think those first three, and don't you think J.P. Crawford and the rest of the crew, and don't you think the rest of them through 90 games have said, hey, man, we deserve the opportunity to get one more arm in here. And if Justin Dunn comes back and Marco can turn it around, gravy. But we need another bona fide, legitimate, at a minimum, for three or four starter in this league.
Because it's not like you can have too much, right?
Never.
You can never have too much, and, you know, because you've had so many injuries, there's almost an assumption like, well, okay, the other guys are going to be fine, but we don't know what's going to happen with Kikuchi here, right? Logan Gilbert's throwing more innings than he has, right? I mean, so like Flexen, we've never seen him before this year, so we don't know what his stamina is and how deep into a season.
And we know bullpens are incredibly fickle and they're unbelievable right now and don't get scored on and everything else, but into August and September, that usually changes.
You got to go add one to two starting pitchers. Seriously. And maybe you want to, you know, kind of soft step into that and maybe not commit all the way right at the beginning. But don't you have to add at least one, if not two starters to this group in order to move them forward?
Yeah,
I think you do. So
I do. Yep.
We talked about last week what some of those options are and talked about Kyle Gibson. We talked about Drew Smyly. You know, I know everybody sort of chuckled, oh, Drew Smyly, ha ha. Well, you may want both of those guys the way things look right now. Now, so that's... That's number three.
You know who else got some arms is the Rockies. The Rockies have a few guys. And I know, obviously, their all-star is probably going to be way, way, way Marquez too expensive. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, there's some arms around baseball. And if I'm making that point to Mr. Stanton and I'm empowering Jerry DePoto, I think this group has earned the right to give them one more arm, to give them a bona fide opportunity to continue to.
And that doesn't mean you have to give up your top five prospects, right? I mean, you can give up a guy in the 10 to 12 range that maybe not going to make the bigs one day. I mean, Juan Thin is sort of the like extra piece of the Paxton deal. Like, he might bring you back a guy who's maybe he could get you Drew Smyly, right? He's not going to last you forever. He's not going to be incredible. But if he got you back Drew Smyly, wouldn't you part with that? I would.
Mm-hmm.
I would absolutely give that up. And if it turns out that he turns into something one day, okay, fine. I mean, those are the risks.
It's pretty clear with how many holes the Mariners roster has right now that they're not in a win-at-all-costs buy mode at the deadline. Mm-hmm. But Jerry DePoto's been pretty clear. If they're going to add, they're going to add to this team, and it's going to be not at a cost to prospects, this is the time now when you can say we planned at some point to contend, and we planned at some time to open up some money to do it. And now we're going to bring on some costly veterans that don't cost prospects to get us over the hump.
Get it done.
Big picture market conditions right now. We've got a couple weeks, right, before the trade deadline coming out of this.
Yeah, from everything I've heard is that nobody really wants to start selling. Nobody wants to be the first seller and set the market.
Okay.
Right? So that's why this thing, well, we want so-and-so. Yeah, we know. It's not that we're not going to trade them. We're just not ready to be the first ones into the pool here.
And the Mariners' schedule coming out of the All-Star break?
Right to the Angels.
Mm. Yeah, they go with the Angels and then Colorado, Oakland, Houston.
Mm. Pretty
meaty. Takes you pretty much to the deadline. Texas.
Yep.
So, Yeah. I mean, you're going to play some teams, right? I mean, you're going to find out whether or not you're truly
those
in
are
this
in
thing.
Colorado, which they've been one of the best home teams. The A's, obviously, are, and the Astros sit atop you in your own division.
Yeah.
Double digits above 500. Good,
the thing
really
is,
good
it gets, you know, eventually it's going to get easier. You're going to play Tampa and New York again, but there's a lot of games against Texas in there. There's a bunch against Kansas City. You play Arizona, who's absolutely awful. You play them for six games in a home and home. Right, Kansas City. I mean, there's some really bad teams on your schedule left to come that you should be able to take advantage of. So you got to have the horse to take advantage, because what you're seeing in your rotation right now, not good enough. Another observation, Brock, your guy J.P. Crawford is just in the middle of everything.
Yep.
Just anything positive that happens. We've spent probably too much time talking about him, so we don't need to go too deep into it. But he's just, whenever you need a big event, right before the Haniger home run, right, the big grand slam, there's J.P. Crawford just finding a way on base to preserve that thing and give Haniger a chance to win it, and he does. It's amazing. Yeah.
Pretty remarkable, and I was looking at the draft that went down, and I know we'll get to a little bit of that as well, and just hearing some of the narrative and the commentary, and man, you look at the first 60 picks, and it's shortstops, it's catchers, it's center fielders, it's pitchers, it is all up the middle, right? First baseman, good luck to you. Third baseman, there were a few second basemen, I think, in the first 60 picks, but it is shortstop, shortstop, shortstop world, catcher world, pitcher world, as it always is. And outfielders that can absolutely run and cover ground. So to be strong up the middle and to have JP, and he was such an intriguing centerpiece of so much conversation coming into this season, right? And what is he going to be? This is the, I don't know if this is the make or break for his entire career, but this is for your narrative here in Seattle and for the trust that you want to gain with Jerry DePoto as they're building this thing and looking at all the pieces and a shortstop market after this season that's going to be as hot and maybe even here at the trade deadline as it's ever been with superstars and big, big names.
Mm-hmm.
He's put himself right into that mix of saying, yep, I'm not going back down. Let's go. It's a fun thing. My Macy's in these AAU tournaments and you get to Chicago and you get with, you know, I don't know, 70 courts that they lay down at the McCormick Center. And you get to see, you know, all right, here's Michigan. Here's Michigan crossover. All right. Here's the team out of Miami. Here's the team out of Dallas. Here's the, you know, the Cal Stars. Let's go. Let's see how you measure up.
Yeah.
And it's fun, you know, just competitive, highest level. See where you fit. And for J.P. Crawford in a shortstop market that is loaded with superstars who've done way more than he has, whose back of their baseball card is much stronger, and there's no competition about that. But for these 90 games of importance to their individual team, find me another shortstop in this league that's been just, you know, that transformative through 90 games for their ball club.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really short list.
Well, it's a good lead into the last sort of big observation of the end of the first half, which is love Rally Kid. The whole Rally Kid phenomenon is great, and I just want to be clear: Rally Kid, much better than Maple Grove.
Which is better? Which is better?
Real, genuine, natural, not forced, completely, you know, unique and came.
It's just an unnecessary detour, Mike. You went well out of your way.
No, I'm talking about how great Rally Kid is.
At the Maple Grove.
No, I'm saying
Stick Riz.
Did I say anything about the Maple Grove?
Beard at the whole crew.
I didn't say anything about what they lack. I'm just saying Rally Kid, great, because it was real, it was natural, it was genuine. I loved it. I thought it was really great. And the way the team kind of became a part of it and service and Shed Long and Mitch Haniger and all those guys kind of bringing him down, hanging out with it. It was awesome. Loved it. That's exact. I mean, isn't that the kind of bond between team and city you want?
Yes.
I love it. Very real, very,
I mean, we're
very
on podcast,
genuine.
So we can delete this if it's inappropriate and offensive. But I didn't have my readers on when I first was watching the highlights of Rally Kid.
Nope. Nope.
And I, what?
I don't know. Whatever you're going to say, I don't feel like you should say it.
Okay, I won't.
Whatever I won't. You're about to say, I don't feel like you should say it.
All right, we'll just leave it right there.
I just have a bad, I don't know what you're going to say, but I don't think you should
I
say it.
I thought it was our old intern, the guy that became stat guy. And he
Cameron O'Neill.
Yes. Thought it was Cameron O'Neill.
I don't remember him.
Yeah, no, you don't.
I thought Brock was going to go another obscure reference that he thought it was like Brian Long or something.
He looked like Brian Long.
Like, oh, is that,
he looked like Sammy
Long. Jan and Reno?
Yeah.
Looked like Brian Long's kid.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, like a young
He was on with Paul Gallant on Monday. He said he's just out there, quote, I was panting like a dog. The kid is a riot.
He's awesome.
DJ got him on the phone for Danny and Gallant Monday, and he was like, Okay, yeah. Hey, you ready to go on? And Rally Kid says, is this live or recorded? I was like, what? Is this kid, like, how long have you been doing this? What do you mean, is this live or recorded?
It's mature.
He's like, it's live. He goes, all right, pressure's on. He's like, okay. Like, Rally Kid's just taking over.
Rally Kid's ready to, like, seize his moment, though. Like, he knows this is his chance to do something.
Rally Kid was living the life. He had to do the interview at 8:30 because he had baseball camp at 10.
I love it.
Like, so wow, good. Summer.
I remember Rally going Kid. To baseball camp, man. That's where I first learned to smoke cigarettes.
Oh, as it should.
As a 9-year-old.
No.
From your coach? From your counselor?
No, from the kids.
All right, Socky.
From my roommate.
It's going to be a mob red.
From my roommate. First time I ever smoked a cigarette was with my roommate at baseball camp. Geesh.
How old?
14, okay. Probably.
Oh, man. All right. I was hoping for like 9.
No. we got Pall Malls or
We're
something.
We're going down to the park.
No, it was late at night. I don't know. That was the first time. Anyway, Brock, you know what a meeting is?
A meeting?
Yeah. What if I spell
like
it?
A Teams meeting? A Zoom meeting?
No, what if I spell it M-E-A-T-I-N-G? A meeting.
Go on.
Speaking my language.
What would you think about a meeting with Famous Dave's? They can beef up your meeting.
Ooh.
You like that?
I do.
Pretty good. So they do a whole like catering deal where you can make your meeting better, make it delicious, make it memorable.
What are we talking about? What are we? Come on, bring them.
Oh, you want to know what they've got? Yeah. Well, I wanted to first tell you about, you know, everything that's customizable, full service. They've got their famous Q, and it's designed to allow you to kick back, relax, and just crush some classic barbecue. All right, here you go. Smoking starters, fresh salads, barbecue bundles and feasts, slow-cooked goodness, Brock, ready to party wherever you are. So you want to know, like, could mean Georgia chopped pork.
Yeah, do we got the Georgia chopped pork or not?
That's an option.
Okay, good.
And you can go Georgia chopped pork. You can go barbecued pulled chicken, sliders.
Yep.
And then, you know, last one was my favorite. You can go St. Louis ribs.
Yeah.
Gotta have it.
The only good thing to ever come out of St. Louis. Like, St. Louis, one of the bottom three cities in the United States.
Gosh.
But so St. Nice. Louis ribs.
Sloppy greatest ribs. Show on turf, St. Louis ribs, and...
The Arch.
The Arch isn't that great. There's nothing else great. St. Louis is a terrible city. Honestly, it's one of the worst cities I've ever visited. But St. Louis ribs, A+. So, Famous Dave's Authentic Barbecue, there you are, behind everything. Pit Masters are getting the hickory logs smoldering in the smokers around...
4 a.m.
every day, hand rubbing the meats, fresh spices, slow cooking them to perfection. They've got locations in Everett. They've got one in Tukwila. They've got one in Tacoma. And of course,
got that ghost kitchen, baby.
Got the ghost kitchen in Northgate, Seattle. For more info, go to famousdaves.com. We mentioned All-Star Break, Brock, and the Derby certainly was like must watch this year for a whole bunch of different reasons, but. You know, I think a huge portion of it is this whole, like, you know, once something gets buzz around it, yeah. Other people need to watch because of FOMO, right? Fear of missing out. And this year, finally, Shohei Ohtani has generated a level of buzz that people who would not necessarily be glued to their television sets watching the Derby want to see this guy, and I call him a freak in every positive sense of the word, what he's capable of doing at his size, speed, agility, everything else. He managed to, and he didn't win it. He was good in it. He didn't embarrass himself, but he brought a ton of life to the event. And then thankfully, once the eyeballs got there, I thought Pete Alonso and Carl Ravitch and the rest of the group like really made it pretty good television last night.
Kudos to him to say yes to that.
Yes. Agreed.
And his management and all of his people and everybody else. Because many times, superstars, especially in that sport and in basketball as well, and you can think of like LeBron or MJ, and MJ did the dunk contest early, but just say, I'm good. I'm gonna take care of myself. I don't want to mess with my swing. I don't want to get hurt. I'm already going to be the starting pitcher in the All-Star game, right? And play the field and do everything. So, I'm good on the home run derby. And he didn't because you're right. He infused an immense amount of energy into and eyeballs into that scene with 50,000 people at 5,280 feet without a humidor with the baseball. Getting hit and jacked 500 feet out of the park. It was pretty cool stuff.
It was. I mean, obviously, Pete Alonso and how much he's into it was just a. I mean, it's.
Was that
it's
interview?
Weird.
Was that interview Haniger-esque?
A little bit. Yeah, I mean, he was super intense.
Oh, my gosh.
It's like that guy did all the greenies before he decided to do home run derby.
The guy could have hit 100 home runs out there.
Oh, is he sat down with Ravitch?
He was mad that he only could hit 16 in that one round. He's like, what do you mean I'm done? I want to keep crushing home runs.
And he must have hit like 10 in a row.
It was awesome.
Just to left center, just driving the ball.
It was pretty cool, though, wasn't it? Oh. And just like... I mean, it's a little bit like, you know, the guy who takes it way too seriously at your, like, company softball league where you're just like, all right, dude, tone it down.
He had me, giggling, this is awesome. Unbelievable.
I loved it.
He made nearly twice his entire salary.
I know.
He made $1 million last night. Dude's contract, $600,000.
He's made more from the Derby than he's made from the Mets, right?
Yes.
His career earnings.
That's insane.
Yes. So it's a pretty big deal to him.
Absolutely. Yeah. So good for that. I mean, there's a lot of money at stake for him. But that was fun. And I thought, you know, as much as I hate Shohei Ohtani for not coming here, and I do, I hate him.
You do?
I love that you hate him.
Yeah.
You literally see
not hate him?
His charisma, his smile, everything, and you're like, I hate that guy.
Yeah, because he should be here.
And we traded for all that international slot money, bro.
We spent how long thinking he was going to come here? And he decided to not just not come here, but to go to the Angels, who were terrible. Oof. He hasn't even made them a little bit better. Like, I hate him for it. Yeah, I love the fact that he was laughing throughout the whole home run derby. Like, everything about him is amazing. I love that he is not only throwing 95, leading the league in home runs, but maybe the most impressive, well, maybe not the most, but another impressive stat in there, he's leading the league in triples.
Yeah, he can run.
Like, he can flat out do everything there is to do on a baseball field.
How about that picture of him and Ichiro of the Mariners, I think, tweeted out? Did you see that?
No. He's three times his size. He's huge. Yeah.
Yes.
He's a really big dude.
Gigantic.
It also elicited a lot of comments of people, why is Ichiro in a full jersey? I was like, thank you. Now the whole world gets to experience this.
Not just like, because like Junior was just wearing his Mariners shirt.
No, yeah, they're at batting BP, and it's and Ichiro is in his cleats, his pants, he's got his sweatbands, his gloves.
Oh, he's comfortable.
Like, what is going on?
Maybe
Ichiro
he doesn't view
playing?
It as a uniform. He views it as like, clothing.
That's just what he wears.
Yeah.
You see him at UFC, he's wearing that.
It's a style.
it's like Chris statement. Egan with a yellow jacket. That he wears to bed.
Right.
Yeah, Ichiro did look about 65 in the picture, though. Man, yeah.
He's got a lot of gray going on.
Yes.
But, all right, I hate Ohtani. I mean, absolutely. He's awesome.
As a Mariners fan,
right.
I deeply hate Shohei.
Deeply hate.
Love
him.
That.
As a baseball fan,
so deep. I love watching Shohei Ohtani. I hope he has incredible personal success, but I hope the Angels absolutely just wet the bed every day.
Totally, totally agree.
Completely just spill all over them. I would love for them to start spending $30 million a year on a new player every year.
Who's
and
washed
get
up
worse
and, bad.
And worse and worse every year they go.
So
until
great.
The point they have Ohtani at 43 years old hitting 40 home runs and striking out 300 in a season at 43 years
Being
old
Albert
and they're
Pujols.
Losing 100 games.
Yeah.
That's what I want to see from
Well,
the
it
Angels.
Could very well happen. So, all right. So this is what you bring up the point that I wanted to get to. Let's play revisionist history for a minute, because as much as I am mad at Ohtani for not coming here, and I hate him for it, would you rather have him and a disgraced and suspended Robinson Cano and his salary, plus the, you know, Felix and the fork sticking out of his back, Nelson Cruz, Diaz, etc., or would you rather have Kelnick, Kirby, Hancock, France, etc.?
The point being, they would not have torn it all down if Ohtani
I don't think you could have torn it all down with Ohtani on your team, right?
But,
I mean, maybe
he's not
they
commanding
could've.
A lot of money. He's not making a lot of.
Yeah, I mean, so maybe you could have done both. I don't know that they would have done.
I mean,
both.
I don't want to kill the segment.
I don't know that they would have
been
done
known
both.
To do that in my lifetime. Brock just killed the bit and everything. I don't want to do
no,
that.
No, it's a good question. I don't know, but I'm guessing that it would have been a lot harder to tear down. That you would have been at the very least closer,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, you probably would have come close. You already came close to making the playoffs in 17 or 18, whatever that year was.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you didn't make it. You would have had Ohtani on your team or knowing that he was going to be with you next year, right? Like there were like enough things in place.
Instead of saving money the last few years, you'd have been spending it to fill the team with more veteran talent that's closer to winning now.
But you wouldn't have some of these really incredible nucleus pieces moving forward. You wouldn't have had Kelnick. You'd still have Cano's salary. So you wouldn't have been able to spend that much more because you would have had some. You would have been paying him to do nothing.
Cano would still be suspended.
Well, right. You at least get that money back, because when he's suspended, the league gives you the money back. That's how they got that trade when they when he got suspended the first time. So you get $25 million back to spend. But yes, it's still a challenge to think in the future, in the next 2-3 years, you still will have that money on the books. That's a challenge.
I think I'm still taking Ohtani. I think I'm taking what we're witnessing as a once, not even in a generation, in the history of baseball kind of talent. And imagining him here in Seattle, and we know, and everybody thought, oh, West Coast, it's L.A. L.A. is a different market, man. L.A. is weird. L.A.'s got a lot of weird. Seattle, and we saw it with Ichiro, and, you know, what the reaction in the Pacific Rim, and if he were here doing this in Seattle, it would be so off the charts, explosive, unbelievably incredible. And I think the fruits and the finances and the money that would come flowing in with that would allow for more spending. I have a hard time saying, yeah, and Logan Gilbert, I think, would be here regardless.
He would have been here either way. He was their draft pick based on what they had done the year before. So
I know this was the push, and I know it was the impetus to totally tear the wall down. So I don't want to minimize that. Almost by losing him gave you then on that legal pad the opportunity to say,
let's do this right.
Correct.
Because it's also not just those guys at the top of your system.
No, it's the entire farm system.
They truly invested in the whole thing. And yep. I don't know. I'm torn. I like the position the Mariners are in better than the position the Angels are in. Right? Who do you think is poised to be better over the course of the next 5 years? I think the Mariners do.
Ooh, that's a tough one.
The Angels system is such garbage. They had to fire. So keep going back in history. Mariners decide to hire Jerry DePoto. Who's the other top candidate for the job?
Billy
Epler. Billy Epler signs with the Angels instead. He's already out of a job because he's done such a lousy job in Anaheim. The Angels farm system is garbage. Their roster outside of the two best players in baseball is garbage. Their pitching staff is garbage. They're garbage. They just have two great players. And the rest of it is complete and utter trash. Except for Fletcher, who just kills the Mariners.
Fletcher!
That just kills the Mariners.
Gosh!
What did he say? It was like 8 of his 12 home runs in the big leagues have all come against the Mariners?
Sunday, though, and Fletcher has driven in every run for the Angels. Today.
Settle down, dude. Just
we
settle
know
down.
An individual.
I'd take the Mariners' future over the Angels' future.
We know a single individual cannot elevate and lift the tide of a dysfunctional organization in baseball like it can in football. That a single individual,
even if he's
like
both
Tom
a
Brady,
pitcher and a hitter.
Yes. And the best in the league at both.
Yes. We know that can't be done. We watch Mike Trout there, right?
But you would think
in his war over the last decade and what that's meant, it's still...
You would think two of the best players in baseball might at least get you going.
But give me Ohtani and give me then Jerry and Scott and their eye and their development game and Andy McKay and everything else that we're seeing. Yeah, I think I'd still... I don't hate the guy like you and how do you do, because ultimately he had a choice to make, and ultimately he went with Trout and L.A. and everything else in that market.
Really bad choice.
But, man.
Wasn't it a terrible choice?
I don't know. Is he the face of baseball right now?
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't think that could have happened, like, anywhere?
Oof. I don't
know. You think that's an L.A. thing? I don't think so at all.
I think he was right. Connected to Mike Trout and... people already ready to look
funny
to that
I don't
team.
Think so at all yeah, I think it's just think it what he's help. Doing is so different and unique compared to what everyone else in baseball is doing that he people want to put eyes on it. To say it's a three-ring circus, it sounds negative, but I don't mean it that way. Like, there's something unique and different that we've never seen before, and that's what people are responding to. He's dominating in multiple ways. Doesn't matter where he is, right? This is Deion Sanders. Didn't matter where Deion Sanders played. Doesn't matter where Bo Jackson played. Bo Jackson played for the Kansas City Royals, one of the smallest markets in baseball.
If he were in
now,
Tampa
I know they
Bay
were not
the,
what
Pittsburgh.
They are now, but like, yeah, I think he would. I honestly don't think it has even a bit to do with where he plays. Mm. If he played for the Pirates and they had the same record as the Angels do right now, absolutely. If he was doing the same stuff, It'd be a little weird because he'd be in the National League and the whole pitcher.
How about in St. Louis? Like, yeah, but your favorite city.
If he was in St. Louis, it'd be a huge deal.
Yeah.
I mean, but like, I don't think it matters. Any 30 city, he's in. He's absolutely the same monster star that he is right now.
Yeah.
So congratulations. You went to the Angels. They're still bad. How's that working out for you? So there you go. I don't know if you'd have Harry Ford, because that's another high draft pick that you end up with, right? Number 12 draft pick this year. Did you love the Harry Ford stuff, Brock?
That dude's an athlete, huh?
He can jump.
Powerful.
You see the like 60-inch box
go
jump
DK
thing?
DK Metcalf. Got a little competition here with Mr. Ford.
Well, not in baseball, because DK is terrible.
Oh,
DK,
gosh, is he bad.
Did you see this at the beginning of the celebrity softball game?
No, he was trying to hit a ball out of Coors Field.
But he didn't make contact.
Correct.
I mean, like...
He should have gone... Did you see later Von Miller laid down a bunt?
Yes.
Yeah. Maybe DK should have gone that route.
I would have. I mean, you know who JoJo Siwa was like. She'd go out and play. And she came up right after DK. She's like, you know, 4'3" YouTube star. My kids know her.
I saw that. I don't know how much we want to unpack about the celebrity softball game.
She crushed the ball.
Tim Kirchen was there. He was called with his son. And you thought Tim Kirchen had a weird voice. His son. So I thought it was Bev Moens. I was like, what is this? They said it was going to be the Kirchen boys. I'm not even kidding. I was like, wait, but they said it was going to be the Kirchens.
Wait, are you serious?
Bev Moens is here?
Well, give me the impersonation of both, Kyle. That's your role.
Well, Kirchens was like, when Von Miller laid down the bunt,
he's
the best player in this NFL, and he's here laying down a bunt. He's like cracking unbelievably, and his son was just like, welcome to Coors Field, where we are seeing the celebrity softball game. And I was like, what
that
is
was,
this?
The play-by-play was Tim Kirchen's son?
Yes. I rewound it.
I am learning that for the first time right
now. I rewound it to be like, because they put him on, I was like, whoa.
I'm just learning this.
Yeah, it was a shocking turn of events.
Wow.
Yeah.
That dude from Migos can play, though. He can do everything. That guy was the MVP of the NBA celebrity game, and he was dominating the Major League Baseball game.
We are at a nexus in this show here, because for so many years, Salk has been referencing like 1980s movies, and he's been all behind, and now your girls are of an age. You're hip.
I'm like,
who is he talking
I'm
about?
I'm jumping past you with JoJo
Siwa. JoJo Siwa and Migos, like, and this guy from Migos, right? And Quavo, and
JoJo C was just a kid in a candy store. Yeah, I could like actively
welcome.
Sing you 5 JoJo Siwa songs.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you even remember your 80s movies now? Like,
no.
There's only so much space in your memory bank.
A peanut brittle.
I'll tell you, Avery's 9 next year. She will be the same age I was when I saw Die Hard. So we are starting to have. You know, like,
starting to prime the pump.
Yeah. First, she's got to see what it looks like when people die on camera. Like, she hasn't seen, like,
oh my,
like, yeah, fake death camera thing yet. You know what I mean? Like, oh.
Longshanks. She started with Longshanks.
We started with The Mandalorian, so she could start to get used to, like.
Yeah, people die in that show.
Yeah, but it's just, like, laser death. It's not bullets. You know what I mean? It's just, there's softer somehow when it's lasers than when they're just.
Like, this couldn't actually happen.
Or it's not like Bruce throwing the guy through the window. And, like, so I think she's got to. she's got to kind of warm up to that. I really like this Harry Ford pick, by the way. And I would guess, Brock, that you do, too, not just for the raw athleticism there, but just what it seems to signify, which is that instead of going with another college close to the big leagues ready guy,
yep,
they said, okay, upside. Whoever's got the highest upside, let's take risk-reward pick. Our system is now at a point where we can afford to try a couple high school kids and see what happens.
The second-round pick was a switch thrower. How about that?
Yeah.
You like that?
Yeah. A little Pat Venditti action.
Yeah.
Who doesn't like that?
Yeah.
Find me the best athlete available at number 12. Give me the guy that's the most, what was the word they continued to use in the sense, explosive?
Mm-hmm.
The most explosive athlete you can find at number 12. We got enough pitchers. We got enough college pitchers in the system, at least. Maybe not in Tacoma. But we've got, you know, we feel pretty good about that. And they still, right, they still spent some picks. The A&M pitcher went in the third, fourth round. So they still got their pitchers. They still got their guys. But, yes, first two picks, let's go athletes.
Yeah, I really like
that. Let's continue to add Kelnick and Marte and just the overall level of explosive athleticism You're speaking my language.
Carl Ravitch. So say what you want. I'm just sort of incorporating some which is better questions here. But Carl Ravitch over Chris Berman was a huge difference maker. I think Ravi does a great job with everything. I thought he did a good job with the baseball draft the other day. I like Carl Ravitch pretty much whatever role you want to play.
He's got just a matter of factness to him. That used to be a little just too much for me. And now, and I think supporting cast and people around him, and you know, it just kind of softened him just enough that he's more relatable. Well, I'm with you.
He also had some tough interviews over the course of those two shows. Like, he had a lot of like, ask a question, get nothing, and then be like, fire another question as if the 18-year-old kid he was interviewing was like paying any attention or could hear him. I mean, like, there were like some rough moments.
Right? Staring at him, like, after the first three questions, like, I'm dialed in. So what's your mindset? I'm going to win. And then literally Ravitch is awesome because then he says what all of us are thinking, like, dude, you're kind of dialed in, huh? Like you're all in.
The best question I saw him ask is he had Jack Leiter on, you know who I mean? Mm-hmm. Al Leiter's kid who got drafted by the Rangers, number two. Yeah. And he's wearing his Rangers jersey at his house and this and that. And as Ravitch is starting the interview, he goes, how'd you already get a jersey? Do you have like, how many of those jerseys did you have? And Leiter's like, oh, I had 10 of them. Like I was prepared for a whole bunch of different things. But like, I think sort of looking at the surroundings, not just being rote, sticking to the script. Yep. I thought he did a great job and not calling every home run.
Can you imagine the back?
It would have been rough. Night?
Well, especially with the timed event. There was no time between pitches. Right. He would have just been for an hour saying back, over and over and over.
So question for you guys, just kind of a nerdy, I'm going to see my producer and the Big 12 media days coming up and then Big 10 media days. So we're like 50 days away from college football getting going. So some of that stuff cranks up. And a big debate that's always been in our production meeting, I'm curious for you three, how you took that in last night. Do you like the split screen?
No.
Mike?
Yeah.
Howdy?
I really liked it.
You do?
Yeah, okay. It was good.
It was just, it was too fast paced. Plus, it wasn't just split screen. Up at the top, they had pitches swung at, percent of swings, home runs,
it's funny.
On pace for.
It's funny. They didn't have the right stuff, though, at the top.
So I,
now,
much
now we're going really deep on the home run derby
Let's
from a like,
and
the production standpoint. I didn't care about the pace and who was winning. I wanted to see the same thing I look for now after every home run. How far did it go? So give me the launch angle. Give me the bats or the speed off the bat, and give me the distance. Right? Why weren't they showing that? Yeah, that's like the whole point.
Because they were showing pace and percent swings and percent swings as home runs.
But they were turning it in.
I don't need advanced analytics. It's the home run derby.
I don't care who wins. I only care to see like how far they're hitting
every one of them.
So Will, you know, we've talked to Will Carroll before in the past. He's the injury expert guy. He's got a very different idea for how they should do home run derby. Which is you get, forgetting about however many swings you get, you could work that out. Rather than number of home runs hit, it's total distance of home runs. Mm. So you get, so you get more credit for hitting longer home runs.
Hard as a fan to watch. I think it's great. Like the NBA has, you know, 2 points, 3 pointers. If you had distance markers,
right.
You hit it over 450, it's this much. It's worth two. You hit it over 475, it's worth three.
You you make it like wiffle ball, right? Like, oh, if you hit it up over this, it's a triple. Like, that I think would make it even
put some
cooler.
Hot zones, a couple hula hoops out there.
Yeah.
Hit it in this zone, it's worth 6 points.
And if you take out one of the kids out in the outfield, you win.
That happened last night.
I know. Alonzo did it. You get a break. It gives you an extra timeout.
Kid's getting drug out of there.
If you hit a kid.
Get out of here. Get out of the way.
You get an extra timeout.
We're hitting dingers here. We got to go.
Yeah, I honestly liked everything about the home run derby. I like the fact that he came back from his timeout needing 7 home runs, hit 7 straight. See you later.
That's incredible.
Dude, that guy he's locked in. That was pretty cool.
This is Brock and Salk's Blue 88.
Blue 88!
We take you to the field as Brock Huard breaks down 3 football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Saul.
All right, Brock, we got some football questions here for you today. We've barely talked any football at all. It's such a big baseball time of year. But I'm going to get you some football questions. We're just a couple of weeks away from training camp. And that's sort of where I start question number one. Nothing. I haven't heard anything yet on the Jamal Adams front. When will we finally hear publicly from him and his camp?
Yeah, we are a couple weeks away from training camp beginning and, physicals and all that good stuff. And his physical will be an important one. So he will be on the very front end, expectation-wise, of coming in. To make sure, are you going to be able to pass your physical? Are you going to be put on the PUP list? When are we going to be able to get going? And if so, where are you contractually? We also know from our years and years of doing this, Salky, that, that the nice thing is we know how this organization functions and works. We know how John Schneider and Matt Thomas and that crew operate, and they go away. They go away. When it is not work time, it is we are out of the building and we are not going to get work done. And thus, Cam Chancellor's holdout is a huge bombshell on the first day of training camp, if we remember that, right? Percy Harvin, huge bombshell. That's why, Russell, I think, in his first negotiation, put that deadline of, the 12:01, the day before, the minute before, that or what have you. We got to get that thing done. So I don't think we're going to hear anything when we tape next week. And the following week will be the start of it when he's expected to be there. I don't anticipate anything until that day before, that night before, and then I do anticipate some noise.
Yeah,
I don't think he's just going to go off quietly.
No.
I don't think this is going to be just an announcement. We get an email or we see a Ian Rappaport or Shefty up, a deal is in place and nothing is done. I think there's still going to be a few sparks here before this thing gets finished.
It seems almost impossible that there wouldn't be, and he'll wait till the right time, maximize the influence of it, etc. So, question number two. So we're starting to see, Brock, the effects in college sports, right, of the name and likeness deal. So name, image, and likeness.
Thank you, NIL. Get
Thank
it right.
Thank you, NIL. What? How far does this
Not
go?
Not NLI. You know what NLI is, right?
Non-legal.
The fax machine. Fax machine.
Oh, national or letter of intent.
Nice.
Good job. So we have NLI, and now we have NIL. Don't be confused.
God, the NCAA is the worst. How far will college athletes go to make this money?
Yeah, well, I had a unique experience. I'm kind of curious your take on this and your feeling on this. So I shared a little earlier, Macy, a big AU tournament, July, huge season. Really the first opportunity for college coaches to get back recruiting on the road. And the way it works is these shoe brands, Adidas, Under Armour, Nike, have their huge gauntlets, these huge, huge tournaments. I mean, thousands of kids and coaches and everything else in Chicago and Des Moines, down in Dallas. It ends outside of Atlanta. And you have all these coaches. It's kind of just the epicenter of recruiting, right, for their opportunity. So I'm curious you guys' take on this. So I'm sitting there. We're in this huge convention center, and you can see the coaches, kind of like NFL or MLB scouts. They, they wear their polo. They're wearing their hat. You're seeing where they're from. It's just kind of their designation. And then I see this younger player, but I know I'd actually seen her play. So she was not a high school player. She had signed at a pretty prominent program, and she is wearing the gear from head to toe, walking around all these courts in this convention center with all these players and coaches and everything. I'm like, and I turned to Molly, I'm like, isn't she a player in college now? What's she doing here? Like, she's not a coach. She's not being recruited. She's certainly not playing. What is she doing? And she's like, you know what she's doing. I'm like, no, I really don't. Like, I don't know. She's like, she's trying to grow her social media following. She's trying to grow her brand on Instagram to gain more followers so she can be a bigger influencer and make more money.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, really? That's how all that, like here? And so I'm kind of, just curious and captivated. I'm kind of watching. I'm wondering how many people, coaches, kids, parents, are all of a sudden going to follow her on social media just because she's there wearing her college stuff? How does that work? How does that operate? I honestly was not old man in the sky.
Being a big
like
Instagram influencer myself, let me explain to you the process.
Right. I'm not, honestly, it was not like, oh, this is so stupid. I was like, great. I mean, on one level, I'm like, that's really cool. She's taking initiative. That's really awesome. Like, that's this day and age that we live in. Like, this is the world that these kids live in to try to grow their follower list on Instagram and TikTok or whatever. And you see it with the LSU gymnast and the Fresno State women's basketball players. They have millions of followers. And because of it, they're influencers making lots and lots of money. The other part of me is like, man, I'd really like to chat with her at the end of these 3 or 4 days and see if that was at all worth it. Was the DK
and it might not be
two followers, five followers.
Right. It might not be, but it but the fact maybe some trial and error, right? Yeah. She's trying to figure out what the best way to do it is, but I don't know. Kind of interesting.
It's an interesting idea. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
It's as I said, I did not have a visceral reaction in any way. It was more of just a curiosity. Mm-hmm. And then you see, like, Big 12 Media Days are going to be this week down in the Big D, and Spencer Rattler, Salk, is the quarterback out of Oklahoma. Right, he's going to be a third-year player, so he could go pro after this year. He's projected to be a top-five pick. He's big time. He signs with Raising Cane's, pays him right to be their endorser. And then what does Lincoln Riley do? Yeah, I'm not going to bring him to media days. I'm going to bring the fullback tight end. So, you know, and I don't know. I shouldn't say that. I shouldn't say that was all Lincoln Riley's decision. It may have been Spencer Rattler's decision. Maybe Spencer.
Yeah, I don't know.
It may be Spencer saying, yeah, you know what? I don't need any more attention. Stop. I don't need any of that.
Come on.
Based on what we know of professional teams, how they feel when their own, like, players go out and get endorsements with competitors of their sponsors.
Right.
Yeah that's,
is there,
that's a
is there any? Is there anything more hated in this world than the amount college coaches hate the idea of their players having even an ounce of power or money or anything that keeps them from being 100% beholden to them in every way?
I'd be careful.
College coaches are
the worst. I'd be careful throwing
a
blanket on all of them. Oh. I'd be careful about that. 10 years ago,
not
when
all
started
of them?
This, 15 years ago, no.
But there's many, man.
And
there's
what would Pete Carroll do if he was at USC coaching? All right. What is Herm
Edwards? Okay, all right. There's exceptions.
You don't
want
to know what Herm Edwards is doing. Fine. It ain't on the up and up.
There's exceptions.
What
but
is
you
Nick
still
Saban
get my
doing
point.
At Alabama? He's you hiring still a get whole department so he can help his players make some money because he knows, Mike, in order to recruit, keep winning, and have the very best talent now has a chance to make money. And I'm not going to just throw a total wet blanket on all of that. So I think some of that is, some of that guard is changing in college athletics.
Question number three, you know, since Ohtani's sort of the big conversation for years, we've had, you know, talked about Brock, like, you know, ways people can cross over, do multiple things. What does a Shohei Ohtani football player look like?
I thought about that a lot as we've watched this and all of the incredible attention and the Babe Ruthian comparisons, right? Of doing things that haven't been done in 100+ years. And we talked about this in the build-up to the Mariners and hoping he was here. Is he actually going to be able to pitch and sustain and play in the field and do all of that and hit for yes, he's checking all of those boxes this season in incredible ways. What would that look like in the NFL? It would be much, much bigger than it used to be, right? So if you're comparing to the old days, you had in the YA Tittle era, those guys were quarterbacks, they were kickers, you know, George Landers, right? They were punters, Tom Tupa, but a starter and a punter and a kicker. Like, you've seen that in football, at least in past generations. So that would be kind of the first step as far as an actual, okay, Shohei's doing.
But he'd have to be a quarterback and something else.
Punter and kicker.
No. He'd have to be a quarterback and a safety.
Yes, he'd have to be high school Jake Locker.
Yes.
That's what he'd have to be.
Yep, you got to be a quarterback and a safety.
High school Jake Locker.
Richard Sherman, wide receiver, corner.
Nope, not
even good. You've got to play quarterback as a starting pitcher.
Oh, to be at that level.
To be Shohei Ohtani, you've got to be a starting quarterback and a defensive starter.
And you have to lead the league in touchdowns.
Right, you can't do any of these things. And interceptions. If you lead the league in touchdowns and interceptions, then you can be Shohei Ohtani.
Interceptions on defense. Yes.
Defense. Not like Dan Marino.
Yeah. How about running back, linebacker?
Close, but you got to play quarterback.
How about being just a touchdown scoring?
15 years ago, yes. But not now.
Not the way the game is. You got to play quarterback and be a safety. Or like
high school Jake Locker. You want to know why Prescott. He was?
Maybe you
a
could
legend.
Be like these guys here in San Diego State. Brock, have you seen what's going? Are you going to get any San Diego State games this year? Any
if they
chance?
Win the Mountain West,
Brock.
Yeah, if they win the Mountain,
they've
West.
Got wide receivers wearing numbers in the 90s.
Oh, God.
They've got wide receivers wearing 96 and 92.
What world?
What is happening? Talk about name, image, and likeness.
So Kyler Murray playing QB and corner.
Yep. No, that could work.
Yeah,
I'll buy that. If he starts taking meaningful
snaps. Lamar Jackson legitimately trying to do it the other day, doing some cornerback drills on the hardwood.
I don't see any reason he
asphalt.
Couldn't do it. I bet you that guy would be just fine.
It's like when Marshawn used to work out with the D-line.
Yeah. And then Doug Baldwin would go over there. It was just so he didn't have to be near Russ. All right, well, let me give you an extra. It's not quite Blue 88, but I'll just kind of throw it in there. just since we apparently you're doing like retrospective and obituaries here the last couple of weeks and last week talking about Terry Donahue, but Alex Gibbs died. I don't know how familiar everyone is with that name, but he's sort of like the dean of offensive of the, line coaching, right?
Yes, and the pioneer, really, of the whole zone run blocking scheme.
He built and was the Broncos when every running back had 2,000 yards every year. Terrell Davis, Landis Gary, and Mike Anderson, and all like he's sort of the brains behind all that running scheme.
Didn't he come here with Pete for 2 months?
He was here very briefly, but.
Did not make it to training camp.
How influential? I mean, is he one of the most influential people in the game today?
I think it's fair to say he's the most influential O-line coach in the history of the NFL. And when you listen to, and I got a buddy of mine that's a neighbor now, Todd Weiner, the old offensive tackle for the Seahawks. He played then for Atlanta for 7 years with Gibbs. You listen to Mark Schlereth anytime he's on a broadcast and listen to him, you know, do studio work or radio work, and you talk about the influence. And then just look at today's game and look at the number of people in the Shanahan tree. Well, the Shanahan tree is the roots of that is Alex Gibbs. So Mike Shanahan, play caller, coordinator, you know, he was passing game guy and obviously Super Bowl champs multiple times with John Elway at the end. But the roots of that system were Alex Gibbs and what they did at the line of scrimmage and the influence he had. And the dude was an absolute psychopath.
Can you explain?
No, seriously, he was a psychopath. And the reason he lasted for a few months was like, Pico, I can't do that. I can't have that. That's not. I'm a positive guy. I'm gonna build people up. I'm gonna look for the best in them. Alex is from the era of I'm going to destroy every fiber of the belief of yourself in your being, and then try to build you up. And I'm gonna dog cuss you, and I'm gonna just humiliate you. I'm gonna absolutely
love it.
I would love that.
Sign me up. I'd love this.
I was listening to Schlereth the other day talk about him. In fact, and he's like, "Yeah, I had this holding call and took away a 65-yard touchdown." And Gibbs on the field just screaming every expletive under the sun. And then, of course, it's now 3rd and 25, touchdown off the board. You know, incomplete pass, and he meets me at the numbers, and he's got to berate me the entire length of the field until we get to the bench, so everybody can hear. And he continues to undress me, and you are the worst player, and you are awful, and everything else. And they get to the bench, and it's Earth as he tells. He's like, okay. And then I'm ready for him to build me back up. So I come to the bench, take my helmet off, and he's like, hey. And then he's still just dog-cussing me. And you should be embarrassed of yourself. And there was no building back up. You know, it just never, that was not in
it. Just let that go.
Yeah. And by the way, I've had his son is a defensive coordinator in college football, and he was the exact same way. Like, I sit in a production meeting with him. He's like, oh, he sucks. This guy's awful. He's the worst I've ever coached. He can't play. I got nothing to work like, you know? So he comes from a different era that I think a Todd Weiner or Mark Schlereth or any of those guys would say, probably couldn't do it today.
Right. No.
Probably could not do it today.
Guys are crumpled.
Yes.
That'd be worse than getting hit by defensive linemen for them. They would just end them.
Well, yeah, he's 150 pounds, so eventually somebody's going to just rip his head off. Like, you just don't talk to me that way. You don't dehumanize me that way. You don't offend me and treat me that way.
Frank Clark sneak up behind him and punch him in the side of the head.
But in his era, yeah, he was the roots to so many of these systems you still see
flourish
today.
I don't want to spend all day on it, but can you just give me a very, we've talked about it before, but briefly, what is the big thing that he started?
Well, and again, I was just watching, in fact, the Super Bowl replay the other day. The Broncos, when Elway won it, against the Packers. And what they were able to do at the line of scrimmage, just sawing people in half. Not chop blocking, that's always been illegal, so you can't engage and the next guy comes in. But he taught ballet and artistry at the line of scrimmage. Right, it wasn't just all brute force. It was athletic guys that were, you know, the Mark Schlereth, 290 pounds that could run and be able to get to the legs of people and get to the second level of people and truly cut block. You know, kind of like the triple option system that you still see survive and thrive at the military academies and some other places in college football. Right, it was in many ways that, but not in a triple option, but in a zone scheme. And you still see it with McVay and the younger Kyle Shanahan. And you see the movement, and you see, frankly, Tom Cable was a disciple of Alex Gibbs. So when they could cut block and they could get and own you at the line of scrimmage, Mike? And how many times in 2011 and 2012 did we have an absolute blast preparing for games with Marshawn in that line? Like, you're going to break their will. You're going to take the soul of your opponent away because physically they'll tap out. They can't go 15 rounds. So he developed that in the fiber of the being and the character of his players, and then ultimately in the scheme, going out there and just, you know, cutting people and sawing people in half in ways that, man, I really didn't want to play against him. You know, you hear that all the time with military school. I hate preparing for him. I hate playing him. It's no fun to do it. Well, for those decades in the NFL, those were his kind of O-lines. And pretty cool. Yeah, the wins and the success in the Super Bowls back up his success.
Pretty darn cool. All right, well, there you go. That's another Brock and Salk podcast in the books. When we are back next week, Brock, we'll have, you know, Jared Kelnick up maybe? It sounds like there's some rumblings. Kelnick may be back up here after the All-Star break.
You see Kelnick and Julio in the Futures game, sharing the outfield together.
Yeah, yeah. That sounds pretty good to me. I mean, like, they didn't have a great game, but so what? Like, I mean, like, that's an honor, and really, I mean, they're both top five prospects.
In the next 2 weeks.
Julio's already dominating Double-A. Took him like a day. Oh, I'm here. Let's go.
Next 2 weeks, we will get to training camp,
yeah,
and we will see whether these Mariners add an arm.
They're going to have to. I'm going to go out and say they're going to add an arm. I don't see how they exist without it. They're going to have to add an arm.
Thankfully, not a reliever, because the reliever arms in the past.
No, it's not that. They need a starting pitcher, and my guess is that's going to come sooner rather than later.
Two cracking drafts in that window, too.
Pretty impressive. All right, a lot going on here the next few weeks. We will catch you guys next week, and until then, the hay
is in the barn.
See everybody.
This is the chopper!